Excellent. Talk TKD episode 8. Obviously, you will spot the gentleman sat beside me. I will get on to his introductions very quickly. I'm going to whiz through the sponsors because I know you all want to get on and listen to this man speak and not myself. Big thank you to Super Fight Series, that one of my personal sponsors. They've got shows coming up in London. You just need to Google them, find them on Facebook, find them on their website, etc. They have some fantastic shows. They've got some the UK and so internationally some of the best fighters, K1, that come and fight on their show. So if you're about and you get a chance, go see their show. Snapmehappy.co.uk is an event photography company. They are fantastic. The gentleman that takes the photographs has martial arts background. He knows how to get the best shots. If you're a club owner or school owner, then it's free for him to come down. He'll take some photos and can even get a percentage of the profit. If you go to snapmehappy.co.uk, you can find that. And lastly, but not least, truewarrior.co.uk. Fantastic. They have brilliant dough box, taekwondo equipment, kickboxing stuff. Lots and lots of their gear, their clothing is fantastic. The t-shirts are great. Go to warriorforlife.com and you can find them there. And mention that you went there through Talk TKD. It would be fantastic. And that goes the same for all of them. Excellent. Mr. Vinard, I would like to introduce you to our audience. Could you just give us like a really brief background of when you started and etc. For those that are less familiar with you, please, sir?
Okay, it won't be that brief because it's gone on a long time.
Yeah, to be fair, we've got all the time in the world, so.
Thanks very much for having me. 9th of February, 1964.
Crikey.
James and Tam McQuaid, Olympic judo coaches, invited me to the judoka for a trial lesson. I turned up, I said, whoa, I don't like this. Mm. I said, this is no good. I said, they're all too big. And I was the youngest there, so it was kind of quite a shocking event.
Yeah, do you mind me asking how old you were?
I was about seven.
Seven, wow.
Seven, yeah. I was seven because it was my birthday. Yeah. It was a birthday gift. They were kind of like uncles, but uncles I didn't know. Relatives I don't know. And so I went there and, after the first night, I said, I'm not going back. I don't know what this is all about. Rolling around and jumping in the air, throwing people. Yeah. I said, no. The second day, I phoned them up and say, I want to come back. And I was there for till early 70s when I went to UKTA, Ricky Has Taekwondo Academy. Mm-hmm. I think it was around 1970. So I'd been doing judo for 6 years, so I was relatively quite good. Ricky Ha himself was a totally unknown being to the likes of myself and many, many others who thought they were martial artists. I think the reason I went to Taekwondo from judo was, obviously, it's all to do with kung fu movies and things like that, and the influences that like daily life have on you. So I went there. But this was slightly before he opened his academy.
Right.
I went to Garnet Hill Primary School, where there was a small chap from Malaysia, Malaysian Chinese chap, teaching Taekwondo, and I was watching. And it was quite awesome to watch this man, who we know now as Grandmaster Hokkan Tae.
Right.
Was teaching a small class in a primary school in Glasgow. And I watched and I joined in and I watched this man and there was nothing else I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Ever. ever again.
Mm. Love at first sight, as it were.
Oh, I fell in love with Taekwondo when I saw that man.
Yeah.
Okay. Performing and teaching. He was an absolute inspiration to me because I came from a very working class background. I came from more or less a poor background, and your aspirations when you're young in those days are very limited. But I watched this and said, if he can do this with his own will, there's nothing that we cannot do as martial artists.
Wow.
You know? So I toddled along there. First Grandmaster Ri opened his academy. I went from there because Grandmaster Te at that time was teaching on behalf of Master Ri.
Right.
And we joined there. So it very quickly for me it developed into a personal relationship with Grandmaster Te and First Grandmaster Ri, and he offered me a job as the assistant manager of his academy. Wow. And to, you know, do all the like accounts and correspondence and every day.
Really at the forefront of the base of the UK Taekwondo.
When UK started, I was at the birth.
Yeah, that's
because
fantastic.
Even when he was in Coventry, we were in Garnet Hill learning under Grandmaster Te. So, you know, when the academy opened, and it was like, welcome to the pleasure dome. Everybody from who was anybody used to come to the academy.
Yeah.
And of course, First Grandmaster Ri himself is an awesome master artist. There are very, very few who are better than him as a martial artist. His knowledge, his abilities far exceed many, many others. Of that, there's no doubt.
I've heard rumors about his. I've been in the same room, but you know that's it. But I've heard rumors about his punching ability and power and making rooms shake and sort of superhero type stuff that he was capable of.
He was capable of so much more than he ever showed.
Right.
Because being in the privileged position I was, many a time I was polishing the mirror in his training hall, and while he actually trained himself with Master Te at the time. And just to watch his ability was awesome, even reversed in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he didn't teach as often as he should.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, as a Taekwondoist, First Grandmaster Ri is my master instructor. He was our instructor.
Mm.
But I would say, for me, Grandmaster Hokkan Te is really my sifu because he is the man who taught me daily.
Mm.
I lived with Master Ri for quite a few years back in those days. I actually lived in his home.
Wow.
And in the academy. I used to get up in the morning, sweep and mop the floor, polish all the mirrors, clean the toilets, clean the showers,
crikey,
all those things,
yeah,
and then train. Then after training, I would do, you know, any admin work which was necessary at the time. And
excuse me.
No problem. And at the time, you know, everybody used to say, what are you doing? What are you doing? You know, and I said, I'm living the life.
Mm.
And it was. That's that in terms of old style martial arts is what it really was about.
Mm.
You have to live it to be a true part of it. So,
wow.
From there, I was sent down to Bristol where I was teaching. I taught in Bath, Bristol.
Oh, okay.
I remember when I came down, I remember two particular red belts who were in the class. I was teaching for Master Lee and Grandmaster...
Excuse me.
It's okay. And Grandmaster Tran. And then when I was there, the two red belts, it was these two brothers, the Davies brothers.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you know them.
I do, indeed.
Yes, they were doing things as red belts that not many other people were doing, to be honest. And when I was taking the class, I was thinking, this is amazing. This is what every instructor wants, every teacher wants, is to bring out the best, not only in ability, but in mindset of any martial artist. So, you know, like Grandmaster Andrew Davy, you know, and I go back a long, long way.
Yeah.
Heads up to him, he's one of my favourite martial artists.
WTF instructor based in Bristol, if anyone's interested in tracking him down and training with him.
Yep, Staple Hill, I believe, isn't it? Somewhere like that?
Yes, yeah.
But we're not advertising for him.
Yeah.
He's doing well enough on his own.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah. So, you know, I had that experience. I used to run two clubs in Bath and one in Bristol. And Grandmaster Tran, who was quite a complicated character. He's both ITF and WTF, depending on who he's teaching. And it's so funny to me because, I mean, I've been, 2011 or 12, I was very kindly invited back to ITF and UK ITF by Grandmaster Trevor Nichols. And I was recommended to him by Master David Lau, Hong Kong Taekwondo Council, because him and I go back to childhood.
Wow.
And he said, because I'd sort of retired through injury, I'm really retired. I'd kind of been unable to train.
We're limited, yeah.
I believe in my own ability, and I believe in we as martial artists having to be able to do what we teach.
Mm.
And if we're not in a position to be able to train and teach, then we can only be advisors and not teachers.
Mm.
So I sort of took on that sort of role with several friends and did a few seminars and things at classes. But I thought, that's it, it's over. Heartbreaking as it seemed. Well, the consultant specialist said the neck and spinal injury was so severe that I would never be able to do any sport.
Oof.
And I just said, I think you might be wrong here, but we'll see. So I think I won.
Yeah.
Because I'm back training. I'm back enjoying the art I love. Mm-hmm. Though I did Taekwondo for 26 years. I taught Taekwondo for 26 years, the art skill for combat, which is Grandmaster Hokante's own art, which is, you know, an offshoot of several styles.
Ah.
I taught that for 26 years.
Wow.
And I was the managing, or the manager, as he used to call me. He said, I'm the boss, you're the manager. And I used to manage Taekwondo internationally, worldwide.
Oh, wow.
For and on behalf of First Grandmaster Te.
Yeah.
It's because I'm quite an organised person.
Yeah.
I'm quite good at paperwork. And obviously I did what you do. I did a bit of full contact. I did a bit of competition and stuff. But primarily I was a promoter of the arts. I looked into, studied, considered, and did my best to promote martial arts as a way of life rather than just a sport.
Yeah.
Though it is both,
mm.
you can still be a sportsman and have a martial arts life.
Yes, sir.
But some only want the sport, which is understandable. You know, but
but it's not what we do, is it?
It's not who we are.
So, yeah.
I mean, you're a martial artist. you're a martial artist. What you utilize with your art is the ability to enter competition, win medals. I mean, so many of my peers and my fellow martial artists forever looking to achieve. And that's not a bad thing. Achieve what goal within martial arts depends on the individual. Some want medals, trophies, titles, promotions. There's so many things. My biggest achievement in martial arts, in my humble opinion, is that I've been able never to consider myself better than I actually am.
I wanted to ask you that, because obviously you've already covered, like, you know, you've taught grandmasters and accomplished so much, and but obviously, you know, your official title is sixth degree.
Taekwondo,
yeah.
I have master stages within Taekwondo.
So that resonates with me, like, a lot. Like, it is that just a process of the break from the injuries, etc., that you took, and the other career, or is it like, I don't know, what do you think about the word sort of masters and promotions and degrees? Because obviously you've seen belts come in and you know the sort of almost the forming of, like, the rankings and stuff like that. I wonder what your ideas on that, and how you think about
it. I sat my sixth degree in, I think it was early 86, and I did the full ITF 60 degree examination, and several months later I did the WTF one. And I did them both under a panel which included Grandmaster Tran, who was both ITF and WTF, Master Lee, there was two other masters there as well, and I sat them both within 5 months of each other. And that was
sweating just thinking about it.
1986.
Wow.
And so everybody says, well, why are you still a sixth then? I wasn't injured then. I was still training, I was still teaching, I was still doing lots of things. For me, what happened is 1987, my long-term fiancé, we got engaged in 1973, and we got married in 1987. And we moved to Scotland, back to Glasgow, and obviously Grandmaster T was the biggest person in Glasgow at the time, and he said to me, I want you to join Taekwondo with me and help me promote my art and take it somewhere. So I said to him, well, that's fine. And he said, right, he said, what we'll do is we'll make your probationary first dan. And I said, I'm really happy about that, because I said to him, I want to join as a white belt.
Wow.
But he, unlike many masters who say you can never go back in grade, he doesn't believe you can. But he doesn't believe that once you've achieved your black belt status, you can never go back to being a coloured belt status student.
I feel the same. I had that situation with somebody that wanted to come out training. So almost I was white. I was like, no, you've achieved your first stand. Exactly. You've done it. You know, it will just take you a lot longer, you know, if you want to grade for your second
stand. That's like, right. I mean, it will take longer, because obviously there's so much to learn. Taekwondo wasn't a new art to me. I knew all about it, and I knew, you know, but obviously there was different tulls and sparring forms and everything. It was totally. It's actually. It's called Taekwondo, the art of skillful combat, and it is much more geared up for combat. For me, that's why I put on a lot of full contact shows and things like that. You know, and competitions for and on behalf of Taekwondo.
It's still recording. Yeah, we're all good.
Yeah.
just
we're still here. So, so I went back and I said, yeah, I'm more than happy to be a probationary first hand. So obviously, you know, we have skills and abilities and knowledge which help us progress. So I spent 26 years as a Taekwondo practitioner. Well, instructor, manager.
Yeah.
Dog's body. Yeah. And I hope Grandmaster T doesn't watch this because he killed me. But they were fantastic days. But I've always had this passion for Taekwondo. And I'm a very traditionalist Taekwondo teacher. I don't use the term master. I don't even use it when I'm teaching Taekwondo. I'm nobody's master because my master is still here.
Okay.
And we kind of got to realize that it's not all about what grade we are, what title. I'm not saying I'll never, you know, set another grading. You know, that's not up to me. That's up to the body you belong to, because they need, because it is. Taekwondo is a very professional art now. It's not as it was. When I first came into Taekwondo, you didn't need to use Korean terminology. You didn't need to know what a pandai tulio tagi is.
Yeah.
You know, you just had to be shown it and throw the kick. When you sat your grading, you weren't asked any questions about the history of Korea, Taekwondo, or anything else. You were asked, can you break those boards? Can you do this tull? Can you spar? Can you win? Can you be better than you were last time? And that's all First Grandmaster Rhee used to ask of people.
Oh, really?
What's happened is that others having an input within our art input their own little piece all the time. And they have expanded it and progressed it. But it's like, and I think you know the my favorite saying,
know,
Taekwondo was a gift to the world, and it is not owned by any one man, one organization, school, or instructor. It belongs to every person who puts on a dobok, and everybody has the right to take it where they want to take it. Having said that, within the confines of a school, you're restricted to the traditions, the heritage, and the rules. But it doesn't mean you can't have input. What it means is that you first have to learn, gain knowledge, experience, and then, perhaps, then you are in a better position to give good input.
So that's an interesting mix of sort of loyalty to your roots and where you've come from, and studying under that person, but at the same time, sort of acknowledging your own evolution of your training.
It's quite funny because I in 2012 when I had a meeting with Grandmaster Nichols and Master Dedekind as well. And we were sitting there chatting, and of course I knew Master Dedekind quite well. I didn't know Master Nichols that well, but we knew of each other and about each other. And it was really friendly. They were really, I'm really, really grateful that they have so kindly offered me an opportunity to come back to the art I love. And I thank them very much for that. And if I may, if you don't
mind. Please.
As another good friend of yours as well, I'd like to just say thank you ever so much to Madam Kerry Burridge of Stoke Gifford Taekwondo, because she has made me so welcome. And as you know, as a senior martial artist, it's very difficult to go and be part of someone else's club. And when you outrank them, it's even more difficult. But she has treated me with kindness, friendship and respect, as well as a great deal of abuse and hard training. I'd just like to say, you know, that is what Taekwondo is about as well. You know, being a family.
Yeah.
We're all together as martial artists, We should all be positive about each other. I know, you know, everybody else knows there's a lot of fakes. There's a lot of martial artists who teach what they can't do. But they're in the minority.
Yeah.
The art is blossoming. You know, we've got national treasures like Grandmaster Cutler, Master Raymond Gale, so many, Grandmaster Davies, you know, there's so many people like yourself, your brother Mike. There's so many good people within the art, especially here in the Southwest. We're blessed.
Yeah.
You know, and it's progressing, it's growing, it's positive. We old traditionalists perhaps look upon some of it with disdain, but there's a great element of jealousy there, because it's ever so much more fun now than it ever was.
You think things have improved?
I think Taekwondo has improved dramatically, and I think those who go around saying, oh, it's not as tough as it used to be, I don't think they're right. I think it's just different. You know, I go to, as you know, just round the corner from yourself, I go and train with a group of youngsters, and, you know, there's black belts there as well and everything, and they're all enthusiastic. And I never taught anybody under 14 except in private lessons, ever.
Yeah, crikey. Yeah.
I never teach children.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's wrong or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
That was just my choice. Because coming from the era I come from, you always saw kids were kids. But kids are so much more mature now. They're so much, so much better switched on to the world we live in now that we should be teaching them. Maybe perhaps not at 4 or 5, you know, in my opinion, you know, but certainly, you know, 8, 10, you know.
Yeah, that's it's refreshing to hear somebody with, you know, your history and experience and seeing the evolution of Taekwondo because there are a lot of people who say, oh, you know, in the good old days it never used to be like this thing. It's refreshing to hear somebody of your experience say that actually you think that people are doing the you know, we are heading in the right direction. If obviously there's a lot of division within, you know, ITFs and WTF, etc. Like, does that
not with me?
Yeah. Does that sort of trouble you? So if you think back to, you know, when it was kind of a one, and obviously now it's split. Like,
a bit controversial here.
Please, we love that on Talk TKD.
They'll love this. First Grandmaster Rhee. The reason they call him First Grandmaster is he was the first awarded Grandmaster status, the first one, by General Choi. But he's in fact not the first Grandmaster. There were others before him. So,
again,
you go back and you look into the history of all these things and all that. But does it matter? For us here in the UK, there is no other master. General Choi, the father of Taekwondo, is not the greatest exponent of the art. First Grandmaster Rhee, C.K. Choi, so many others could lay claim to that.
Yeah.
You know, and the originators of the art were military men of great intellect and thought and philosophy, and they weren't, you know, probably of the ability that people are today, because it's a different world. It's a totally the 50s, 1950s, 1960s even, the world was so different. The 70s, the world was so different. Everything has grown, progressed, and everything. A lot of the young American masters of the early 70s were awesome martial artists. There was many of them much better than Korean masters, and vice versa. So, you know, I always look back on this, and it comes back to your original question, titles. What are these titles? My Sifu, as I call him boss, or I call him Sifu, depending on the circumstances. When we're in class, I call him Sifu, or when we're out socialising, I call him Sifu. If we're just talking casually, I call him boss. I've never called him by his name in my life.
Really? Wow.
Since the day we met, which was late 60s, early 70s, I've never called him by his name.
Yeah.
And he's my instructor, he's my Sifu. He's also my brother-in-law, which doesn't help. But, you know, I keep that tradition alive.
Mm.
Whereas, it was so funny because so many others who joined Taekwondo, for instance, later, and they all became really close with him and all that, and familiar.
Mm.
You see, familiarity is great. I can come in, oh, hi, Phil, how are you? You know, but it depends on the context of where you are and who you're with. Because it's like you winning a tournament and someone going, phew, that's not much.
Yeah.
you know. So
yeah,
I think the respect and observing heritage and tradition is very important. You know, and of course the respect has to be earned. And I mean, you know many people in our art as well. And so many of them, you know, just automatically earn that respect.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And there are some, perhaps, we're not keen on, or we don't like personally.
Mm.
But you still have to respect their abilities and heritage. You know,
sir.
Lineal descent, your lineage.
Mm.
Where you come from. So many people have these days, they have, oh, I trained with Grandmaster this one. Oh, look, I took a photograph of General Choi. I'm one of his students. No, you're not. I've personally sat having dinner in First Grandmaster Ri's house with General Choi, where he spoke a few words to me. We, you know, or invited me into the conversation, and I was nothing then. We're talking early 70s, and you know, you're just in awe of these people because you're young, you're naive, you're in love with the art, and he is the father of Taekwondo, so obviously you're in awe. But then people have taken these things. They go to an IIC and they say, oh, I've trained under, you know, General Choi or First Grandmaster Ri. No, you haven't.
You've spent a
speck of dust in time being rewarded through his endeavours and knowledge. You're not. That's why I never claim to be a friend, an acquaintance even, of General Choi. Though I've spent time with him when he was alive, obviously.
So going back to the association and sort of division. So, whether rightly or wrongly, I get the impression that for you that it's more about your lineage and your respect for that lineage, and actually what's written on the Dobok doesn't really matter too much, or do you think it does matter?
Well, I could put dozens of badges on my Dobok. It won't make me fly any higher. That's the way I look on it. I mean, obviously, the commercial side, the business side of martial arts, and there's a lot of money in martial arts, and there's no getting away from that. It is a business. There's a commercial side to it, and you can't avoid that. And the badges and the awards and things are all part and parcel of the business side. Within the art, the dough is the art. I mean, obviously, you can't have one without the other, but the dough is the art. Who are you affiliated to? If anybody asked me, when I met with Grandmaster Nichols and Master Didigan, The first thing I said to him, I said, I am really grateful for the opportunity to come back to ITF, but I will not be calling anybody my master, because I have a master.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't jump around. I mean, Grandmaster Tran, who's one of the most famous Taekwondoists in the world, shortly before he died, you know, he was doing awesome things promoting. I never called him master. I didn't call Grandmaster Sabri Sali, Grandmaster T.K. Lowe, Grandmaster Andrew Davy. Well, I can't, I taught him. So, T.K. Lowe, Grandmaster Han Wong, Grandmaster Hoi Wing Lee, C.K. Choi, all of them. I've trained with all of them.
That is a phenomenal list. Yeah,
but I don't call them my master, because Grandmaster Hokkan Te is my Sifu. He's my teacher. First Grandmaster Ri is my master, because he's my first master in Taekwondo. But so, he's not my teacher.
So for you, master is less of like a title, like, you know, this is master, they're master. It is more to do with actually like the student it like places the term master on them, because it's more of about the relationship and the knowledge going from the student to the instructor that makes them the master. And that's what,
if you look upon the art as a living entity, we are the children of that art. And if General Choi is the father or the founder or whatever title anybody wants to give him, right, I don't begrudge him that. I think he is. That's only my personal opinion. You know, we go back to my saying.
Yeah.
You know, he gave this gift of Taekwondo to the world. He gave it to us, the children of Taekwondo, because that's what we are. Now, as we grow older, we become the fathers of our own students. The grandfathers of your own masters. I mean, how many black belts you have, how many students you have, all that. The numbers don't matter. But the fact is, it's like a living entity. You have to replicate yourself, but not in the same way, if you know what I mean. So as we touched on earlier, some people who I've taught are now grandmasters, and they've got children who are masters and black belts and students and everything. So it's like a living entity and a family. And as a family, you might not like your father or your mother even, or, you know, your uncle or whoever, but you have to show that respect. And you have to give them their place in life. Martial arts come from the East, and the Eastern philosophy and all that, the majority of which is rubbish. You know, there's a lot of rubbish spoken about Eastern philosophy. You know, but there's one part of Eastern philosophy, and that's philosophy of the family unit, which though is greatly diminished nowadays within Chinese families compared to what it used to be, it's still there. And a lot of Western people who join a martial art which is taught from an Eastern point of view, do find that understanding that quite difficult. And yet they'll believe in touch the wind and the wind will rustle your hair. And if your hair rustles, you are flying. I mean, really? No. Train hard every day, three times a day. Keep trying, keep trying. Then you'll fly. Reading a few words on a piece of paper won't get you anywhere.
Indeed. Yeah, that's very interesting. Getting interrupted by my cat. Sorry.
Hi, cat.
He's obviously intrigued by Eastern philosophy. She's half Siamese, so.
Ah, that's why.
There we go. So you're obviously, as we were talking, you listed off a ridiculous list of names that you have trained with that are, you know, as we know, founders.
There's more. One thing, I've never trained with General Choi. I'm not a student of General Choi's.
Mm.
I have been taught by First Grandmaster Ray,
mm-hmm.
you know, personally.
Yeah.
On a one-to-one and within a class of other people. But my master or my instructor, my sifu, is Grandmaster Hokkan Tay, because he taught me Chonji, Saju Jirugi, you know, Saju Maki.
Yeah, yeah.
All the way up to, you know, Tongil.
Yeah.
You know, basically, you know, that's where the lineage thing comes in. So many great martial artists came to the academy, and it wasn't to pay homage to anybody. It was coming to train because that was the place to be.
Yeah.
First Grandmaster Ri, as we've talked about before, is an awesome martial artist. But also, the chief instructor of Great Britain and Northern Ireland in the early 70s was Grandmaster Hokkan Tay. And people used to come to be taught by him.
Mm. Yeah.
And even though one or two of them were of an equal rank to him, none of them were on a par with him physically, mentally, or spiritually within the art of Taekwondo.
If who is this a tough question, sorry to put you on the spot, sir, but if you would, who is the best exponent of Taekwondo that you've ever seen? If you, or can you not pick one?
Well, I was in America and I was having dinner with an actor. And this actor is called Tam Tola. And he's from Korea, but he's Chinese. Right. Korean Chinese, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody used to watch his kung fu movies back in the late 60s and early 70s. And everybody used to think, oh yeah, he's an actor. And a lot of them were very non-martial art types.
Mm.
But what they didn't know is that he is actually, first and foremost, a martial artist.
Mm.
For ability with the legs, which Taekwondo is more or less a kicking art, let's be totally honest, ability with the legs, I don't think I've seen anybody ever kick as well as him.
Mm.
But overall martial artist, of all the people I've ever met, my instructor is the best.
Yeah. Wow.
There's a saying in the, after slagging off all the philosophy, I'll give you a bit of philosophy now. There's a saying in the East about, you know, paper tigers.
Right.
You know, you can have 20 certificates saying you're this, that and the other.
Mm.
But that's only paper.
Mm. Mm.
You've got to be able to produce the goods.
Yeah.
Grandmaster Hokkan Tay had some of the fastest kicks I've ever seen in my life, and I've seen a lot of great people. He has a natural aggression which would have made him one of the greatest competition fighters ever.
Yeah.
If it was. Because back then there was very, very nothing. He won Orange Bowl in America. He won a couple of things in America, you know, open competitions.
Yeah.
And we're talking like the competitions that Bill Wallace, Chuck Norris, all those were in.
Yeah,
you know, all the so-called greats.
The US
But
Open,
he won them. And he was only a teenager when he won it.
Wow.
And he's the best fighter I ever saw within the structure of that time. He has a great foresight of what a martial art should be, but you know, there are many, many thousands of fantastic teachers out there, you know, and competitors, and I mean, you're both, and you know, you and Mike are both, and that's not the easiest thing to do. I, you know, when I was running Taekwondo, and there was, I think it was third or fourth Dan, and he was like Scottish, English, Welsh, British, European Taekwondo champion, European Taekwondo champion, then he became the Taekwondo world champion, and he was awesome, he was a great competitor, but the problem was, when he decided he wanted to teach, he didn't know how to teach.
Right, yeah, yeah. It's a whole different ball game.
He opened two clubs, and of course, when you've got all those titles and you're very flash, and he had ability, there's no doubt about it. But then he opened some schools and suddenly learned that the art is not the art of fighting. It's the art of ability to be everything within it. And you don't learn that by spreading yourself too widely. You have to focus and grow slowly. It's like grading. Everybody rushing to be a grade. So many six stands running around the world asking masters, if I join your organization, bring my students, can you give me sevens? Why? If your own master thought you were good enough, you'd have it already.
Yeah. It pains me that you see so many jump an organization, get a new grade, you know, and they've been that belt for nowhere near enough time. Yeah, it's sad to say. And I've maybe that's one of the downsides of the division and etc. That because you know, I think I think you're 100% right. Taekwondo, you know, it is a family, and we all sort of share this same, you know, experience. But yeah, as soon as the sort of politics comes into play, and as you said, business and money and stuff like that,
we can't take Taekwondo away from the realities of life. It's part of everyday life. It is our life. Everything else around it is peripheral. Earning a living, you know, looking after the kids or the cats. You know, all these things are peripheral when you are devoted to your art. So therefore, you sacrifice a lot. But you still have to earn a living.
Yeah.
So you have to be practical within the art. So in earning that living, you have to, you know, sacrifice time and do something that perhaps you don't want to be doing. So therefore, you can turn your art into a business. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing. All these traditionalists that run around saying, oh, you're only in it for the money. Of course you're in it for the money, to stay alive so that you can live the art you love. It's not because you want to get rich. It's because you want to do what you love doing. You know, if I was ever to go back to teaching, I'd open an academy somewhere and I'd charge. Of course I would. How would I be able not to?
But the, I think that there are cases where that business drive causes people to lose the dough, and I think that's where the sort of troubles that exist is where if people that sort of,
you know, Grandmaster Kwan Duk Chung.
And the name, yes. You've heard of him, right? The name, yes.
He runs one of the biggest organizations in Americas. He's an original, and he is a genuine grandmaster. And he does social media quite a lot, and he's espouses views which many, many people don't like. But he's honest. And he says, why are you asking a 60-year-old seventh dan master to jump and spin in the air and kick a brick? Why aren't you asking him, can you teach me how to jump in the air, spin and kick that brick? So our expectations of people, you know, and our fellow artists is perhaps too demanding, you know. That's where the money comes in, because the bigger and more successful you are, the more you're able to hide yourself amongst other people. Many, many people. I mean, myself included, you know, physical ability is limited, obviously. I mean, I'm 58 years old, and though I like to think that I'm not obese or totally unfit, you know, I kind of think that, you know, you have to work within the limitations. Mm. I will not go and teach a class of senior black belts when I can't actually show them the technique. Mm.
Mm.
That is just my opinion.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, and there's many who do, and that's their choice.
Mm. So really, would you, like, is your opinion that sort of, you know, business is business, people kind of do what they do, look at, you know, what they can do and what they teach more than anything? Would that kind of be your message, you think, or have I got it misconstrued?
I can simplify it a little bit. Mm. I can make it quite simple. Those who teach, there's that old saying, those who cannot do, teach.
Mm.
Those who can do should teach.
Mm. Mm.
But they don't do so because they're on their own path to achieving fame, fortune, glory, whatever you call it. I mean, you know, like competitors. And if they didn't have that drive or that ego or that determination, they won't be successful anyway. So it's not a bad thing.
Mm.
And also, you know, as I said before, to teach and train and compete and all those other things within the art you love as a job, which it's not. It's just the business side of it is just that, a sideline of your everyday living the art you love.
Mm.
It has great rewards and, you know, and probably it, too much reward these days. And as long as you do not compromise the art, the dough, your own integrity, there's nothing wrong with making money out of martial arts.
Mm. Mm.
It allows you to do so. Why not?
Mm. Mm.
But don't compromise yourself.
Mm. Mm.
You know, because that's the difference. I mean, I don't teach children because I don't believe in it, but that's where the majority of the money is.
Mm. Yeah.
But I choose not to. There's nothing wrong with teaching children, you know, if you so wish to do. I mean, Madame Burridge is awesome with the kids. She's really awesome with the kids. I mean, if I stood in front of her kiddie classes, I think I'd be lost.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't know what to do with those kids, you know. But that is what I'm saying is that the art.
Mm. Mm.
Teaching yourself how to teach.
Mm.
People say, oh, but you've been teaching for 40 years. So?
Mm. Still learning.
Yeah, I'm still learning. I'm only a student of Taekwondo.
Mm.
And a student of Taekwondo. You know.
But I would agree with that. I would say that you are a student. But I would also say that you are a master as well. Like, I know that you would never self-proclaim that, but you know, from an outsider looking, you know, the experience, the people that you've taught, etc. Like, you know, we'll try and pin you down. If you were somebody else looking in at, or somebody else had the same experience and the knowledge, etc., would you not say that they were a master of their art?
You're pinning me.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, I can answer that easily. Mm. It's easy to answer that. The answer is no.
Really?
Because I do truly believe in our art being a living entity. And within the Taekwondo family, I would consider myself relatively senior, if not through age, through experience.
It's pretty hard not to be more senior. You were here at the birth of Taekwondo in the UK.
Yeah,
if you're not senior, then nobody is.
and the thing is, I mean, there's others, many others like me who were there as well, and who are now still the old masters, grandmasters, things like that. You know, and I think you know that is fine with me because they have found their own way.
Mm.
That is their way. That is their journey within Taekwondo.
Mm.
You know, and for me, my journey has been totally different. I mean, I've never been that interested in rank anyway.
Mm.
I don't think it's. I prefer the old Chinese style. Number one student, number two student.
Yeah.
And, you know, that style for me is, I think, more appropriate. I remember a red belt, black tags when I first started Taekwondo. Well, not when I first, after a while. And his name was George Yip. And he was terrifying. Terrifying.
Mm.
And yet, you know, he didn't speak, he was, he didn't speak good English, and also he was quite fierce looking, and everybody was terrified of him, myself included, because I had to fight him the most out of everybody, you know, because, you know.
Was that back in the day with no sparring equipment and stuff like that?
No sparring equipment, you know, oh my God, he used to bounce me off the academy walls, and this guy could fly.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, you know, I would probably say he was one of Grandmaster Tay's prodigies, who was really, you know, on a par with, you know, a lot of the, not masters, but, you know, senior grade. Mm. And he was only a black tax.
Mm.
He was that good. I know because he used to beat me all the time. And I always consider myself quite good. One day, we were sparring. And he hit me. And I didn't lose consciousness, but it kind of...
Close to.
I was dazed.
Mm.
And I thought... I could remember in my mind, I was thinking, oh, he's going to kill me now. I can't even see. And, you know, and the next thing I know, he was saying, you're too slow. And I thought, who's saying that, you know? Mm. Am I dreaming?
Yeah.
And I thought, but he never, none of us had ever heard him speak before.
Oh, right.
And he said, too slow. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. But it turns out, well, the point I'm trying to make is that our preconceived ideas of who people are, all these beatings he was giving me was a lesson.
Mm.
Not for him,
for
me.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And
that's
I think, you know, if you look back on people like that who are no longer within the art and didn't go much further, I don't think he even took his first stand.
Oh, really?
Due to work commitments, he had a family and he had to go away and work, and to lose people like that brings it back to the point of the financial side of it. To lose people of that ability within our art because they can't afford to is such a shame. Such a shame.
That's tough. We've been talking for an hour.
Really?
Oh yeah, God. Yeah. That will make this our longest podcast ever. But wow, well worth it.
It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed myself.
Excellent.
Including the cat.
The cats have enjoyed themselves as well. I'm sure it's an honour for them to spend some time with
you. I wish you well with this venture and, of course, your ongoing kickboxing and taekwondo career.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're going to go ever so much. I'm looking forward to meeting up with Master Gale and talking about you.
my ears will be burning. Yeah. But, I just want to say a massive thank you for you giving up your time to come
no
and talk
problem.
About... your experiences, and Yeah, the things that you've achieved, the people that you've met, and as you say, you've seen that what everyone watching this, we all love the same thing.
We love the same
thing. And you've seen the birth of it and come through, so it's been
fantastic. I've seen the birth of it here in the UK. Yeah. And I think, through all the criticism, last thing I'd like to add is,
please,
throughout all the criticism and infighting and politics and nonsense that has gone on within Taekwondo in the UK, first Grandmaster Ri is and always will be the father of British Taekwondo, and is an awesome martial artist, and he's a human being like any of us, and just like wish him well, and hopefully he goes on for a lot longer.
Definitely making walls shake. And
and as for achievements, as I said before, my greatest achievement is knowing within myself and never thinking I'm better than I actually am. I'm just a mere student of this art.
Yeah.
I always will be.
Well, that's very, very humbling for the rest
Thank
of us to hear.
Thank you very much.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I know you all would have enjoyed that.
Take on, everyone.
Indeed, Taekwon. Please share, subscribe to us on iTunes. You just literally need to go into your search bar on your iTunes, talk space TKD in capital letters. You'll find us, subscribe. We have podcasts coming out every week, pretty much, and sometimes twice a week. We'll have the website up running. Again, another massive thank you to our sponsors, and again to Mr. Vinov for giving his time and experience.
Thank you, sir.
Excellent. Taekwon, good night. Bye-bye. Bye.